go suck a fat one.
I have an addiction to smut. I'm right-handed, but my ball sack is left-sided. Get the B-Man a double cheeseburger. Take the tip and shut up. Hello, Internet, and welcome to episode 127 of Verbal Graffiti with your host, Brian Glass, a.k.a. the B-Man, the People's Degenerate. I am balding up here. It is going nearly gone. I still have hair, but as you can see, it is rapidly thinning right up here atop the dome. I have gray chest hair. Now, my chest hair is the pride of my body, of my anatomy. It is the part that is most masculine. And there are grays right here. And it is rapidly flanking outward atop the nipple and towards around the nipple, the grays that is. And I have pubic hair, which is mostly brown, but there have been, the past few years, grays that have been popping up and showing force. So the grays are coming on strong. What you're watching, nay, what you are witnessing right now is the decay of the B-Man. It is a slow decay. Maybe I will cease to live very rapidly at one point. Hopefully not. Hopefully I don't die in a car crash or sudden heart attack or anything like that. But my body, this body is becoming, it's not decrepit, but it is becoming, it is forming into something else. More reminiscent of a White Walker from Game of Thrones, if you know, you know, than a Jon Snow that all the babes fiddle themselves to. They say this, I'm not, this might be an old wives' tale, but they do say that every 7 years we're made of completely different particles, cells, right? Like every 7 years, like all the cells in us, they go away and new cells are formed. So every 7 years, your body is a completely different person. I am a completely different person than I was 7 years ago. And it is, I still love my body. I'm still a narcissist. What can I, gray is sexy. Gray is sexy. Balding, not so much. Gray pubes, you know, don't walk down the catwalk with those. But the gray here, a little bit of gray here, the babes, they swoon for that. I bring this all up because even though you're watching a man decay right before your eyes, I still have opinions, and I have strong, vehement opinions, and those are not decaying. If anything, my opinions are becoming even more profound, more radical. I have a nephew who's going to college. His degree is kinesiology. That's the one that the body, you become a physical therapist. Like, what a waste of 4 years. And I'm not throwing stones here. I love the guy. I love the nephew, but I'm not throwing stones at all. I went to the same university he went to, and I got even a more worthless degree than the one he's working on right now. I got a degree in political science. So I was at UConn, University of Connecticut, between the years, what was it, like 2004 to 2007, 2008. I studied political science, a degree in political science. What do you do with that? I spent 2 years learning about the Iraq War, maybe the worst president of all time, of any country, George W. Bush, got us involved into, a Fugazi war. And I was studying like policy and like foreign affairs. And like what, where did that lead me? I became a substitute teacher for the next half decade plus. So like, I'm not throwing stones. That was a waste of degree. Honestly, like there's nothing you can do with the Iraq war theory, political theory that I spent all those hours in the library and in my dorm room studying. What a waste. What a waste of four. Now, they were very fun 4 years, but educationally, getting me ahead financially, a waste of 4 years. And there's so many degrees like this, like my nephew. He's getting his degree in kinesiology, as I mentioned before. He's spending 2, 3, 4 years studying this. You can learn. Honestly, you want to watch 5 YouTube videos. Hey, I want to gain muscle. What do I do? You consume, what was it? You consume protein, lift to failure. Do that, repeat, repeat, rest, repeat, repeat, repeat. You will grow muscle. How do I get lean? How do I get a sexy bikini body? A calorie deficit. If you eat, if you're eating 2,500 calories a day, you gotta burn 700, and that's how you get lean. And later, I just gave you a kinesiology degree right there. Hey, yeah, there's a little bit more to do with muscles and the veins and the blood and the heart and all that. But honestly, that's all you got to do. That's all you got to do. There are so many hucksters in this world. Almost every professor at UConn and every public university and private university is just, they're hucksters. Textbooks, $400. Well, just put the PDF on the internet for free. Why are you having to pay $400? There are people out there, authors, all right, prestigious authors who write books on how to sleep. Let me say that one more time. There are authors who do studies and write books on how to sleep properly. Put your head on the pillow, close your eyes, fall asleep. I just read the book for you. Like sometimes I wanted this project Verbal Graffiti as I spit out all my words. Like, what is this? Am I wasting my time? Is this going to become something? Am I a hack? Is anyone getting enjoyment out of this project? Like, I enjoy it, but is anybody else? Like, I'll pick up a novel, a book with somebody with, like, you know, it's a name, and then an MD follows it, and then a couple other letters with a few other degrees that obviously this expert has, and it's a book on how, a 400-page book on how to sleep. Are you having trouble sleep? Exercise. Get exhausted. Don't look at your phone, you know, an hour before you go to sleep. Don't drink water an hour before you go to bed. Don't eat a bag of potato chips in bed. Do all that. Put your head down on the pillow. Close your eyes. Maybe you have some white music in the background, white noisemaker, and you fall asleep. You do not need to read 400 pages. So then when I see that novel, that book in the bookstore on how to sleep, and I go, who the fuck is this guy? This guy's a huckster. And suddenly it makes me feel a lot more better about what we're doing here at Verbal Graffiti. Yeah, maybe it's nothing profound. All right? It's not a degree. But at least maybe it's bringing some joy and some laughter and making you think a little bit more. How to sleep. A degree in kinesiology, in political science. What? No, political science. I spent 4 years to get a degree in political science, and you think verbal, we're just over a year. We got at least another 5 years to go before, something comes of this. So, wow. So whenever you look at your career, your job, and you're like, well, am I a hack? Is this making the world a better place? Just no. There are PhD professors writing books on how to sleep and how to gain muscle. It's like, dude, it's just 5 YouTube videos. One afternoon, you can learn all this information that you got in 4 years at whatever college you went to, whatever high school you went to, whatever issue you're having, mentally, physically, with other people in your life. You don't need to read a book. Or you don't need to pay for a course. Just go on YouTube. YouTube University is where all the information is at. It's also where we're at. Verbal Graffiti. Let's keep it going along. This one is not a YouTube, a Reddit post. I was at this weekend, as you can tell by these frames and this bandana, we were back to, it's springtime, summer, so it is going to be seeing me wearing bandanas again. But you can tell, the fancy frames, the bandana, I am a cultured person. I am, although the sense of humor is a bit crude, a bit sophomoric, I enjoy the arts. So this past weekend, I went to a British arts museum near where I live, and I never knew it was there. Like, there's this art gallery I go to that is for free. That's why I go there. But across the street is this British art museum that's also free, and I had no idea. And then I took a snap of it, and I went, "What is? Oh shit! There's a bunch of paintings on the walls." So I'm walking around. And, you know, nothing's, it's a lot of oil paintings from the 1800s. And, you know, if you've seen one oil painting of a British guy, they're kind of all the same, you know, dressed up, wearing a suit, very, very heavy wool with a very stern face, maybe their family around them. And you've seen one, you've seen them all. So I was walking quickly, but there was this one oil painting, which I'm going to put right here. Right, it's of a lady breastfeeding her son. And it is, the title of this painting is Mary Boyle and Nay O'Brien. So that's her maiden name, O'Brien. Lady Boyle nursing her son, Charles. All right, so this painting, oil painting, 1690, oil on canvas. This is thought to be the earliest portrait of a nursing mother in British arts. At the time when it was rare for upper-class women to breastfeed their children and almost unheard to represent in a portrait, this painting is of Boyle and her son Charles standing in an intimate portrayal of the subject. Now, I saw this painting and instantly I stopped. I saw everybody who was around me, they dissipated. My periphery vision was straight. It went away, and I was focused right on this painting because it gave me feeling when I saw this. Immediately when I looked at her eyes, look at her eyes right now and tell me. No, don't tell me, but tell yourself as you're looking at her eyes, what do you see? What do you see in that woman? Because me, the B-man, the people's degenerate, I see a lady who's done with life. 10 weeks after giving birth to her child, she's over motherhood. And when I was there at the at the British Museum, I opened up my notes app and I started typing, audio type, because my hands hurt. So I audio type. And I wrote like an essay on what this painting, like what I thought of this painting, because the thoughts, the emotions were flooding through me. And I was like, ooh, I got to get this right now. Because of all the paintings I saw in this museum, this lady, this bitch of a mother who's over motherhood, like I had to get those emotions right there. My feelings, what I think are her feelings in that portrait right there. And usually I tried memorizing it, but it's just so good. I'm going to just try to read it to you, what I wrote while I was in the museum looking at this painting. So if you're listening to the podcast form, please come to YouTube so you can see the painting that I'm going to talk about now. As I open up, 10 months after tearing her vagina apart, and this bitch is already over motherhood. Look at the despair in her eyes. She has a 1,000-yard stare in those pupils that are reminiscent of the boys that survived trench warfare in World War I. Born into upper class, her life was planned out for since birth, and if there was any vibrancy in her life, Her baby literally has sucked it out of her. Her life now has no meaning other than prepping this boy until he hits puberty and his father can initiate parenthood and impregnating another upper-class bitch. She was meant for the streets, and also her titties literally ache because that son of a bitch has no regard for her body. In this very moment, she'd rather have any inebriated pleb from the local saloon sucking on her tit. She can't even will herself to look her own offspring in the eye as she provides him nourishment. I see a bitch that's lost all hope and reason for living, so young yet can't help but reminisce of life before motherhood, when her tits were free and perky, and whose only purpose was to tease admirers. If born a few centuries later, there's no doubt she'd have her doctor prescribe her SSRIs to numb her mind and mute her emotions. She'd give her son a name brand baby formula filled with chemicals and unnatural ingredients, because after all, giving her boy formula allows her to get back to drinking wine only weeks after giving birth. Unfortunately for her, the year is 1650, and marriage still holds weight of life, till death do us part. Passion, romance, spontaneous adventures, reprieve from responsibilities, uncontrollable laughter, ambition, have all been quelled because of an arranged marriage she had no say in. The moment she gave birth was the moment her life became stunted. How can she love a baby whose eyes are blue when her own eyes are shit brown? Half of this baby is hers, and he looks nothing like her. His father's genes and surname are of the utmost importance, and she, the mother, feels as if she's nothing more than a surrogate to prolong her husband's lineage. And that's what I wrote about this bitch and her son in the moment. And I still believe that. There's one more point, and then we'll move on with the episode. If you're a mother and you don't even make the attempt to breastfeed your son or your daughter, your newborn, you don't want to try to attach that baby's lips to your tit, you're a terrible parent. You're a terrible parent. I think that's going to become a theme of Verbal Graffiti as we talk about what makes parents terrible. But that's just you're an unlovable parent if you don't even attempt to do the breastfeeding. And yes, I know. Brian, how can you say that? I'm saying it. Look at this. 1650. She's trying to breastfeed. Look how miserable she is. This little wench with this little child, and she's not even making eye contact with him while she's feeding him. She's miserable, right? You could be miserable too as a parent. So try breastfeeding your kids. Let's go look at some photos. Oftentimes, when you start a project, in your head, you envision what it will be, what it will become. And I gotta admit, when I started this project, Verbal Graffiti, I never thought it would become a forum, such a staunch pro breastfeeding forum on the internet. Never in my wildest dreams, in my wildest thoughts, in my most radical opinions did I think this would become the case. But apparently, it has. I can't go three episodes without talking about breastfeeding. And maybe Freud was onto something, because I am a boob guy, right? I am a boob and vagina guy. A lot of guys, we talk, oh, you boob, tits or ass. I like the vagina and the legs. But if I had to choose between tits, boobs, and ass, I'm always going to take the boobs. I'm actually more, like, I need the boob, right? Like, I'm a tit guy. Well, the flat tits, that doesn't really do much for me. I need some boob before, pushing the tits out. But enough with the breastfeeding. Then I hope you are breastfeeding out there. If you did just recently push a baby out of that beautiful vagina of yours, that may no longer be beautiful, but you know, it does come back together. So just give it some time. I am a doctor. That is medical advice. You know, this past weekend, I was walking down the street and there was this minibus, not a bus, but it was more of a party bus. You know, those mini party buses that sometimes you'll see at like a bachelor or bachelorette party or just a wedding party where so no one has to drink. So, yeah, it was just this mini bus van thing. And I don't know, I was looking, it was sunny. Like the sun was coming into my eyes, or it was overcast actually. So like, but the way I was looking in, there was a bit of a glare. So I was trying to look inside to see if there were a bunch of babes in there, if this was a bachelorette party or if it was a bachelor party I just wanted to see like, who was the clientele in this party bus. And I'm looking. And I kind of got to do the thing where I'm peering and duck down a little bit to, you know, weave from the overcast sun sky. And I saw a guy standing up and he made eye contact with me. And I noticed he was a barber. Like he was literally a black guy doing a black guy's hair. And just a black barber. And he was having a fun time. And he looked at me. And I noticed him look at me as I was looking at him. So, and he gave me a wave first. Like, hey. And I gave him a wave. And I kept walking. And I probably should have stopped and tried to chat him up a little bit. And get on the bus and do a little impromptu interview. But I didn't, because I kept walking, because I was just, I was a bit flabbergasted. I gotta admit, I was a bit flabbergasted. I've never seen that before. Is that a thing? We have barbers on wheels, and I thought it was the coolest thing. The coolest thing I saw last weekend was this barber. Like, wow, what an ingenuitive guy that is. I struggle to make verbal graffiti profitable, but here's a guy. I don't need brick and mortar. I'll just get a party bus. I'll pick up some people. I'll cut their hair at the red light, and then I'll make I'll have fun, make money. Like, America's beautiful. America's beautiful. If there's a will, there's a way. America is the number one country on earth. I know it is. I know the empire is collapsing, but the people of America, we still got that spirit in us. And also, I did find it a bit peculiar that he waved at me, because as I mentioned in the first segment, and as I showed, my hair is rapidly thinning. I think that day I had freshly shaved, so I had no hair. You know, I had bicked it with my Gillette razor. So it's very odd, peculiar even for me, to see a barber wave at me, because I'm bald. Like, if you're trying to attract business, getting my attention, a bald guy, as a barber, that's not the attention you want to attract, because you can't make any money for me as a barber. Like, you might have a party bus. I might be curious about what you're doing and want to talk to you, but money, there is going to be no transaction between a barber and myself. Like, I don't know how much a haircut costs. I haven't walked inside a barber in probably 20 years. Last time I got a haircut, I believe it was $10, maybe $12 with a $5 plus $5 for tip. So if you ask me how much does a haircut cost, I honestly, it's like asking a presidential candidate, like, how much does a gallon of milk cost? Like, I have no clue. No clue. It's not because I'm some high class guy, it's just in my anatomy my terrible genetics. I'm balding. I don't know. How much does a haircut cost? No fucking clue. Well, let's keep it going along. All right. Found this one on the subreddit for autism. I know some people with that. Autistic and also hypersexual. I feel like I'll always be single. I'm a man, 26. Are you a man? All right, let's keep it going. Okay, I'm a man, 26, with autism, and although I'm still a virgin, but I'm very hypersexual. I think about sex all the time, and sometimes I'd masturbate 4 to 5 times a day. I also have a bit of a porn addiction. Oh, well, do you? And although I don't think I'd watch it if I was getting sex, I have a degree in electrical engineering, and I have a good enough paying job. I go to the gym, I scrub up well, so it's not like I'm some loser who sits at home all day doing nothing except touching himself. I find it very hard to talk to people, especially women, and I feel like I will always remain single and never get the chance to start a family. I'm also hypersexual, and I think about sex all the time. Most women are not like that, and that would probably put a woman off. LOL, laugh out loud. I wish that I could find a girl like me, honestly. I take umbrage with a lot of what you wrote right there on your Reddit post. I want to begin. You threw shade at those of us who stay home, wanking ourselves, stroking our dick and giving us, until we get that loogie outside of it, to spit out. You're not a loser. Okay, any of you listening or watching this right now, I'm making this proclamation. If you stay at home all day, all night, you don't communicate with anybody else in the outside world, and all you do, and you're in a solitary, in the privacy of your own bedroom, is touch yourself over and over, day after day, night after night, multiple times a day, you are not a loser. You are not a loser for doing that. In fact, I might even go as far to say you are the complete opposite. You are a winner. You are a winner. Better to be a guy or a woman staying at home. Sorry, a babe. Better to be a guy or a babe staying at home alone, learning about your anatomy and how to touch yourself and get the sensation of an orgasm than to be a 20-year-old who's never touched themselves and don't know the sensation of an orgasm. All right, so we're pro-hedonism here at Verbal Graffiti. So I don't agree that right away when you attack those of us who stroke our wieners as being losers, I'm not on your side. And a lot of your mindset, I vehemently disagree with. I take the polar opposite opinion. I don't like the fact that you're trying to sugarcoat yourself a lot. You're trying to make yourself a cookie, like one of those Pop-Tarts with the frosting and the sprinkle, the strawberry one with the sprinkles on top. Like you're trying to put the sprinkles on top with your addiction. There's no such thing as being a bit of a porn addict. You either are or you're not. If you're using words to preface the addiction, like I'm a bit of a porn addict. I enjoy, I watch a little too much porn. No. You're an addict. They don't try to soften it, right? If you're wanking it 4 to 5 times a day and you're writing a post on Reddit about how much you masturbate and think about sex and watch smut, you have an addiction to that smut that you watch. So own it. Own it. You have a porn addiction. I'm not judging you. I just dislike you. I take umbrage with you. But I'm not judging you for your addiction. Now, on to what the next thing that upsets me or perturbs me about you. It's not, there's no word to describe, but that when you call yourself autistic, are you really autistic? And just because you're not Don Draper, or you're not good with the bitches, and just because you're a dweeb with a nerdy degree and you're like this electrical engineer, just because you have all these qualities does not automatically make you autistic. Now, in my sphere, in the sphere of comedy, I see way too much of this stolen valor. Like, every guy with a weird personality or who's bad with the babes will go on stage and call himself autistic. All right, I'm saying this right now. From this point forward, if you're going to tell people that you're autistic, and especially me, the B-man, if you're going to tell me you're autistic, I want to see the paperwork from your doctor. I want to see the note with his signature that says that you're autistic. Because otherwise, I believe you're stealing the value of all the people out there who really suffer from autism or succeed from autism. So that bothers me. And also, okay, so you're 26, you're a virgin, you're supposedly autistic. Now, if I were you, I would rearrange the order, right? I would describe myself as a virgin. Like, if I was 26 years old and I was yet to put my P inside a V, I lost my virginity at 20, but if I was 26, if I was you, just a loser, I'm a winner, you're a loser. Okay, but you're 26, you're yet to put your P inside a V. You need to describe yourself as a virgin first, autistic second. I know it seems minor, a minor detail, but it is a big detail. And I think most of you will agree with me that you see a 26-year-old, what's more interesting about that person? The fact that he hasn't put the P in the B, or that he's maybe autistic? Well, we live in a world with a fuck ton of autistic people, so the virginity, that is a trait. That is the fact about you that needs to be first, because that's the most interesting thing about you going right now. And you like wanting to pat yourself on the back, give yourself a tip of the penis for what was the phrase? You scrub up well. That's a very odd phrase for saying you have good hygiene. Like, that's right away. Like, I understand why you are a virgin. When you use the term, yeah, I scrub up well. Like, what is that? So you're basically telling, oh, you shower, right? You use soap and water every day. Like, that's the bare minimum for being a human being. So don't brag about scrubbing up. I can't even imagine. Can I even imagine what your dirty talk would be with a babe if you could ever get one? Like, ooh, do you want me to scrub you up real well on your backside? Yeah. Thankfully for all the babes, you are a virgin. And then also, as a guy, right, as a bit of a porn addict that you are, you spend all this time watching smut, that you actually think there are babes out there who are not as hypersexual as you. I find that very puzzling, because you're in this world of pornography and of the smut. And you should know there are plenty of healthy females, babes out there in America, in your city, in your community, that are maybe not as sexual, but are very sexual, that are on par with you. Plenty of healthy, red-blooded American babes who like to watch smut, who have daddy issues, and who love to fuck. They are out there. Go find them. Be charming. You will get some of them. So don't think that your hypersexuality is a flaw, because there are plenty of babes out there who wish they had a guy who could keep up with their libido. So I find that very odd that you watch so much porn and you think there are babes out there who don't enjoy sex as much as maybe you would like it if you were ever to have it. So I don't like that. I don't like you characterizing the babes as not being hypersexual. That is wrong. That is wrong. Now, it is right in some cases, but in many cases, you are incorrect with that assumption. And then, lastly, in summation, this is going to come to a surprise to all. To all the day ones, the real ones who have been watching Verbal Graffiti, being part of this project since the very beginning, my stance is that it's better for you to remain a virgin until your last day, right? It's better off for everybody other than yourself for you never to have sex. We have enough. Go outside. We have enough people in this country who are autistic, hypersexual, dweebs, who have like chemical, work in Silicon Valley, it is stupid engineering dweeb jobs. We have enough of that. We don't need any more of those genes being spread to the next generation. So if you love your country, if you love humanity, you'd be better off remaining a virgin and not having a family. So for the love of America, do it for your country. Do not have sex. Do not reproduce. We don't need. There's enough people. There's enough nerds in Silicon Valley who are trying to destroy the species that is humans. We don't need you helping them out. So do not have sex. Continue watching smut. Do not have intercourse with another female, babe, and reproduce. And if you must have the sex and the children, my advice is become a passport bro. Go to the Philippines, Fiji, do your thing over there, pass on your genes over there, but stay the fuck away from America. And for the betterment of all of us and future generations, if we're going to remain the dominant superpower, people like you need to not reproduce. All right, let's continue reading A Salesman's Wife by John Lawrence, who I bet you he reproduced quite a bit. That's just a feeling I have from what we've read so far of this novel. Great novel, that is. Okay, we are on the top of page 127. We will read two pages together aloud. "What are you talking about?" he asked incredulously. "Learn how to speak." "Oh, she was concerned about her sexual life. And this doctor, Dr. Carlsbury, he's a specialist, a psychologist who deals with problems like that." "Oh my God," he groaned. "What the hell's she gotten herself into?" "Alan, it's all right. She says she's really good and she's made tremendous progress. She wanted to surprise you." "It sure is hell of a surprise," he said. "Where is this guy?" "He's on Hanson Avenue at the very end," she said. "You're not going there, are you?" "You're damn right I am," he snapped. "But do you think that's a good idea? I mean..." Exasperated, Alan slammed the phone down and on the receiver. "Damn females, they're half dizzy, most of them." Immediately, he started out the door, determined to find out what kind of nonsense Pamela had tangled herself in. But as he passed the coffee table in the living room, he noticed that their checkbook was lying open. He quickly glanced through it and soon realized that the stubs indicated that she had been giving checks to the doctor. His eyes popped open when he saw that she had given him nearly $420 by his rapid calculations. "Oh, Christ," he thought. "She's lost her mind. $400. He went to the phone again and hastily dialed his bank. "Hello?" a female voice said. County Bank. "Hello," he replied quickly. "This is Alan Burns. My wife and I have a special checking account, and there's been a mistake made. I want to cancel several checks that have been written." "What's the number of the checks?" the impersonal bank teller asked. 135 to 140, he said. "Let me check those numbers for you," she said. While Alan waited for her return, he lit a cigarette and puffed nervously. Suddenly, his whole world was crashing down around his head. It wasn't bad enough that he had committed adultery in the most debauched fashion, but his wife had taken it into her head to visit some goddamn therapist and was paying him a fortune. His mind raced back to their angry scene the night he left and the barbaric way he had taken her from the rear. Immediately, he understood why Pamela had done it, to please him and save their marriage. But he also knew she was inexperienced and innocent, an easy prey to some faker, and he was terrified that she had gotten herself into trouble. Go suck a fat one.